Greetings to listeners all around the world. Welcome to Safe Dividend Investing's podcast number 128 on August 10th of 2023. My name is Ian Duncan MacDonald. In today's podcast, I'll be answering five interesting investment questions. The objective of my books, my website, and my podcasts are to show all those seeking financial independence how to become informed, confident, successful, self-directed investors. Question number one. How can investment institutions convince job seekers to become financial advisors? The executives of investment firms seeking to employ new financial advisors are fighting a losing battle. The world no longer needs financial advisors to flog expensive mutual funds, questionable investments, and provide advice that will benefit the financial institution and not the investor. The institution's money and efforts would be better spent on establishing investment schools to teach self-directed investing and financial literacy to those 60% of potential investors who now regard themselves to be financially illiterate. While such education should begin in high school, it is of particular concern to those a decade or two away from retirement. In a study by Pension Research Organization, which can be viewed at https://cppplc.ca, there is an increasing loss of confidence in anyone being able to retire comfortably. I would like to see the government-controlled schools funded by the investment community to teach naive investors how to invest both safely and well as self-directed investors. To provide the close personal training, I could see small classes of 10 students welcomed into a room equipped with a laptop for each student. Over several evening sessions, they would be taught how to access online stock data, such as historical share prices, dividend information, key facts like operating margins, dividend yields, book values, price to earnings, and so on. They would be walked through the process of using selectors to narrow their stock searches down to the best financially strong companies. Analyst recommendations would be critiqued. The course would explore how business executives come to make decisions that impact investing, such as deciding to go public, paying dividends, buybacks, acquisitions, mergers, increasing sales, cutting expenses to meet profit targets, adjusting to change, and so on. They would explore how the shrinking number of full-service investment advisors are compensated and all the hidden charges investors can face if they work with full-service advisors. A review of recent disciplinary actions against thieving financial advisors would be studied. The problems of putting blind faith in mutual funds, index funds, and ETFs without reading the fund's prospectuses would be covered. How to place a bid for a stock would be practiced, as well as analyzing monthly investment statements. To create a strong financial solutions community, the idea is not to develop new financial advisors. The objective is to turn everyone into their own best financial advisor. the course's objective would be to develop investors who would understand exactly what they are invested in and why those investments were the best, safest investments for them. In this day of computers and easy access to mountains of research data, financial advisors have become unnecessary. Just as you can now book a $10,000 holiday online without the aid of a travel agent, why, in this day and age, would an investor want a financial advisor to stand between them and the critical information needed to make an informed stock purchase decision? An existing financial advisor who is paid to separate as much money with as little effort as possible from an investor has a credibility problem. Investors should do all their own research and totally understand what they are investing in. Delegating this research work to a financial advisor is a farce and a leap in blind faith that is not justified if anyone can be taught how to do it. Investing does not have to be complicated and mysterious. The idea that financial advisors earn their money by stopping investors from making bad decisions wears a bit thin and only works for those who have not taken the very little time it takes to learn how to invest safely. The same goes for income tax advice. Financial advisors are not certified accountants and should not pretend to be. It is believed that the typical investment advisor, with their incomprehensible jargon, now push complicated and convoluted investments. They go out of their way to confuse and intimidate investors. There is still a need for financial institutions to provide the computer systems that permit the trading of stocks. But the time has come to face the reality. The financial advisors are now an anachronism. Their time has come and gone. Online trading is here, and those who have grown up with computer games and Google see no need for a supposed trusted advisor taking a percentage of their portfolio for doing what they can and prefer to do themselves. Question number two. What are the risks of only investing in one stock? If you've lived for a long time and been a senior executive in a commercial risk information company for decades, you've seen companies reach great heights and then plunge down into the depths of insolvency. Constantly adjusting to changes in technology, business practices, government regulations, and social norms is required if a company is going to survive. Every business, no matter how large and powerful it is now, is eventually going to disappear. Most newly opened businesses are unlikely to survive for 24 months. It is just too difficult for an underfunded business to take business away from long established companies. People are creatures of habit. They have to see a good reason to transfer their purchasing to a new supplier. Establishing a relationship with a new supplier is stressful for the customer. They wait to see if the supplier can deliver on the prices and product promises to other companies. Thus, they avoid making impulsive changes and being the first to try the new offering. Establish giant businesses who are unable to constantly reshape their companies to adapt to the never-ending changes do lose customers to a few new, nimble, smaller businesses who are at the forefront of new technologies and business practices. It is very hard for a successful, large established company to convert the expectations of their established customers away from existing products and services fast enough to stop them from being outsold by new companies with new technologies. Therefore, to place your bet by investing in one stock is foolish when neither you nor anyone else can accurately predict its future and where in the product life cycle what they have for sale finds itself. This also is the reason you diversify your investments among several industries who are at various stages of change. What I always advise is spreading your risk equally among 20 of the financially strongest stocks paying the highest dividends. Why 20? Because while all may now be prosperous, sooner or later, one of them will fall victim to change and hubris. If that company should ever fail, you will suffer less than a 5% loss of your total investment wealth, which will be insignificant. Why dividend stocks? Because dividends are paid out of profits, which are divorced from the share prices that are controlled by speculators. It is not difficult to realize an annual dividend income in excess of 6% from a carefully chosen portfolio of 20 stocks. The loss of one stock from your portfolio will barely be noticeable, especially when your financially strong stocks, with their long histories of ever-increasing share prices and dividend payouts, are increasing the value of your total portfolio by 12% or more in most years. In the market crash and recession years, when all share prices fall, you still continue to receive your regular dividend payouts as you relax, live off this dividend income, and wait for the share prices of these strong stocks to again reach new record highs. The only loss you might notice is the absence of dividend income from one of the 20 stocks that failed. If that lost company represents 5% of your portfolio, that dividend income would represent about a third of 1% of the total value of your portfolio. There is no law requiring you to invest in just one stock. So why do it? When you invest your wealth in 20 stocks, the strength comes from the total bundle of stocks, not just one stock. Share prices in such portfolios almost become irrelevant, as you have no intention of ever selling any of your stocks. Using stock scoring software to help select and keep tabs on your stocks, you would only consider replacing one of the 20 stocks if its dividend yield percent and its overall score both fell below a predetermined point. Investing this way has given me an ever-rising dividend income and increased the value of my portfolio by several multiples over the last 20 years. It sure beats speculating and liquidating 4% of your portfolio every year to live on. Question number 3. Why do people prefer to save their money instead of investing it in stocks? I think what you are asking is, why do people put all their savings into bank savings accounts that pay little in the way of interest? Probably the main reason is it is easy and risk-free. To make the deposits and withdraw your money does not require you forming a contractual relationship with a third party like an investment advisor or financial institution. All the cash can be withdrawn almost instantly by you without penalty or charge, unlike bonds or some funds. As well, You do not have to educate yourself on doing stock analysis before investing your money. However, like everything in life, there's no free lunch. Your cash is being eaten away by inflation. Each year, on average, you're losing 3.5% of your wealth to it. If you are now 20 years away from retirement, the money in your savings account will have lost 70% of its purchasing power by the time you retire. The banks love your savings accounts because they are lending out your money at 7% or more and keeping well ahead of inflation. Saving account investors make banks profitable, which allows them to pay high dividends. Buying shares in the bank instead of putting money in their savings accounts gives you a higher return and the shares increase in value. It is possible for anyone to quickly learn how to invest safely in the stock market as a self-directed investor. Instead of seeing your savings shrink over 20 years, your wealth can grow by several multiples. You just have to be shown how easily it can be. For some insight on what you have to learn, go to www.saferbetterdividendinvesting.com. Question number 4. Why not borrow money at 2-3% annual interest rate and invest it in the stocks of financially strong companies paying high dividends that grow at 8-10% per year? My response was that for the last 100 years, inflation has averaged 3.5%. For most of my life, interest rates were usually more than 6%. In the 70s, interest rates climbed into the high teens. The odds are that you may have to be generating far more than a 9% gain in your portfolio just to remain on the plus side. Interest rates are always for a set period. You do not want to be faced with an unaffordable interest rate when your loan comes up for renewal. You are building a portfolio to last you a lifetime. Banks rarely lose money. They are quick to adjust their lending rates to make sure they never lose. It is important that you are in control of your finances and never have to liquidate your stock portfolio to pay loan obligations. If anything, opportunities may rise where you may be able to make more money by safely lending it than investing it. Flexibility is important. There are situations where borrowing money for an investment does make sense. For example, if you own a second property in which you might have a 2.25% mortgage, which covers perhaps 20% of the property's total equity, you may have received a good 5-year fixed rate not only for the security of the real estate, but also on the value of your stock portfolio investments. It would make little sense to liquidate investment accounts now earning more than 6% just to have the property mortgage free. Furthermore, the value of that property is growing at a rate much greater than 10% a year. However, when the mortgage comes up for renewal in a few years, it might then make sense to liquidate stocks to remove debt if interest rates are still high. This would remove the monthly mortgage expense from your dividend-based cash flow from which you are now paying the mortgage payments. This second property helps to safely diversify your wealth. Question number 5. Why put your money in a dividend fund instead of investing it in individual stocks? You have to have far more faith in fund managers than I do to put your money into a dividend fund. Once you give the investment company your cash, you lose control over that money. You will have only a vague idea of what the money was invested in. Furthermore, you've given the fund manager the right to change the stocks in the fund on a whim. Every year that you own that fund, you'll be paying money to investment company for that fund. The charges could be 2% of the investment for something you could do better yourself for free. Over many years, this 2% could represent tens of thousands of dollars that could have been invested by you to enhance your wealth instead of the investment company managing the fund. Also, if you have ever needed to liquidate the funds, you can expect to encounter all kind of complications, expenses, and delays that are deliberately built into this contractual agreement you agreed to when you purchased the fund. They are quick to take your money and then fight to hang on to it. Fund managers, to keep their jobs, are expected to at least match the indices that their boss uses to judge their fund's performance. Thus, the fund managers concentrate on matching stocks to indices. Like all indices, the indices include some mediocre and poor stocks that you would have scored and eliminated if you were building a dividend portfolio. It is not the fund manager's money. If the fund performs poorly, he will shrug his shoulders and advise you that he did as well as the index. A fund is a sales vehicle created by the investment company for their sales representatives, the financial advisors, to sell. It doesn't have to be the best fund in the world to be sold. Most investors will invest in it because the sales representatives are expected to make it sound like the best investment vehicle ever created. Selling funds is what they are paid to do. Most investment advisors know little about dividend stocks because they don't need to know much about dividend stocks to sell funds. There's little money to be made by them in selling individual dividend stocks to investors. Those investors who know little about investing naively accept whatever they are being told by the investment advisors about a fund. They do not read the fund's prospectuses, which legally bind them to the fund and are written by clever lawyers hired by the financial institutions to protect the institution and guarantee the institution's profits. There are thousands of funds out there. Try to determine why an investment advisor is recommending one fund over another. Tell him you want to study the prospectuses and review it with him. The odds are he has never looked closely at it or compared it with the prospectuses of other funds. Thanks for listening. If you wish more information on investing and stock scoring, please visit my website, www.saferbetterdividendinvesting.com.